It's been 150 years since the beginning of the Civil War, and most of the ephemera from that age is in museums. Posters, uniforms, photographs, all behind glass. But two symbols of the Confederacy are alive and kicking. The Stars and Bars, and a song that's still as hot today as it was then. You've heard it on television, maybe even walking down the street. Dixie. It is an American icon. And we asked Studio 360's Trey Kay to find out where Dixie came from and why it continues to divide Americans.
On April 4th, 1859, while the clouds of war were gathering in America, Bryant's minstrel show, performing at a Broadway theater in New York City, was about to inject one of the most memorable and ultimately most controversial songs into the nation's bloodstream.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now my pleasure to present a new ballad written by Mr. Tambo, and I must say, against the advice of his friends. It is entitled Dixie.
This scene from a 1943 film called Dixie, starring Bing Crosby, tries to recreate the song's debut.
I wish I was in the land of cotton. Old times are and not forgotten. Look away.
Did you catch that? When Crosby, who is in blackface, sings old times dar am not forgotten, he's imitating a slave dialect, as written by a white man from Ohio.
It's a white person dressed as a black person longing for the plantation south.
That's Coleman Hutchison, professor at the University of Texas at Austin. He devotes a lot of ink to Dixie in his book, Apples of Ashes, Literature, Nationalism, and the Confederate States of America.
The idea is that this person who's singing is away from Dixie, which we understand to be somewhere in the South, and that the person is really crying out to be back there, wishing that they could be back, nostalgically wishing they could be back on the plantation, away, way, way down south in Dixie.
This is why many people have always regarded Dixie as racist. With its happy depiction of plantation life, it seems to apologize for slavery. We can't say precisely who wrote Dixie. Daniel Decatur Emmett, a white minstrel songwriter, most often gets the credit. But Coleman Hutchison and other scholars think that he might have lifted parts of it from African-American folk tradition and invented verses of his own.
One of the things that Emmett's most famous for is his ability to record the purported sounds and rhythms of black speech. Right? So this is a man who made his money arranging and writing songs that would stereotype and in some ways mock African-American speech patterns, African-American culture.
Dixie went viral. And although the North and the South were about to go at each other's throats, whites all over the U.S. loved Dixie. Abraham Lincoln had the song played at his inauguration. When the Confederates were voting on secession, the band played Dixie after each vote in favor. And when Jefferson Davis was inaugurated, the song was arranged to a quick-step beat, something you could sing while marching off to war. And it got lots of new verses.
Southerns, hear ye country call, ye up lest worse than death befall ye. Two arms in Dixie.
This is a Confederate version. It pledges to live or die for Dixie. It was recreated by a musician named Bobby Horton.
Advance the flag of Dixie, hurrah, hurrah. For Dixie's land, we take our stand and live or die for Dixie.
And the Union had their answer. Again, here's Bobby Horton.
Away down south in the land of traitors, rattlesnakes and alligators, right away, come away, right away, come away. Where cotton's king and men are chattels, Union boys will win the battles, right away, come away, right away.
Each Dixie boy must understand that he must mind his Uncle Sam.
Away,
Each Dixie boy must understand that he must mind his Uncle Sam away.
But that Yankee version didn't stick. A Northerner may have written Dixie, but it perfectly captured the warm sentiment Southerners felt for their homeland, even if they didn't live in cotton country. Dan Emmett, a Union man, was none too pleased.
So he will say on a number of occasions that he wished he'd never written the damn song in the first place, because if he had only known what the Confederates would do with it, if he'd only known what Southerners would claim with his song.
When the Bloody War finally came to a close, Lincoln asked the band to play Dixie at victory celebrations. Coleman Hutchison reads the remarks that Lincoln made at one occasion.
"I thought Dixie one of the best tunes I ever heard. I had heard that our adversaries over the way had attempted to appropriate it. I insisted yesterday that we had fairly captured it. I presented the question to the Attorney General, and he gave the opinion that it is our lawful prize. I asked the band to give us a good turn upon it."
It sounds like Lincoln is sticking his vanquished enemies in the eye. But Coleman Hutchison sees it a little differently.
I think he's really reaching out there, yes, to tweak the South a little bit, yes, to acknowledge that the Union had won, but also acknowledging a certain common culture in which the president of the Union, who has just brought to the end the bloodiest war then known to mankind, can also acknowledge an affection for the South and a willingness to work to bring it back together.
But Lincoln was wrong. The North had indeed won the war, but it couldn't claim Dixie. In the Reconstruction era, as Southerners became nostalgic for the antebellum way of life, they got even more attached to Dixie. Confederate heritage organizations decided on a standard version based on Emmett's original verses. But they made one important change. They removed the corny slave dialect, because it wasn't about slave life anymore. It was more about Southern pride. Long into the 20th century, Dixie was popular throughout the nation, sort of like Gone with the Wind. But as the civil rights movement began to make inroads in America, Dixie was a front in a new battle. The Virginia Military Institute is in Lexington, Virginia, situated in the majestic Blue Ridge Mountains. Stonewall Jackson and Robert E. Lee are buried close by.
When you passed Lee's tomb, you were required to salute the flag. And I know the way I got out of that is that I very seldom passed Lee's tomb.
That's Colonel Philip Wilkerson, retired from the U.S. Army.
I attended VMI as one of the first five African-American cadets.
Every May, VMI has a commemoration ceremony for its cadets who died in the Battle of New Market during the Civil War. They helped secure a Confederate victory. For about 100 years, Dixie was a part of that ceremony.
The negative connotation that Dixie held for me, it was associated with the Ku Klux Klan. It was associated with lynching. It was associated with mistreatment of individuals, not only blacks, but Jews and a bunch of that caused conflict within me. Hearing, when I heard the song, music tends to do that, tends to motivate, it stirs the emotion. Those are the emotions that I felt. It caused the conflict.
In 1973, after Wilkerson graduated, the student body voted to eliminate Dixie from the New Market ceremony.
One song does not take away from the valor of those cadets. The student body realized what's more important, playing a old, outdated song or keeping cohesion within the Institute. And I think clearly cohesion within the Institute took precedence.
And this, in the eyes of some, is tantamount to cultural genocide.
People now are denied the use of the song because the politically correct say that it's offensive. It's a form of cultural genocide in that it's stamping out a culture that really is not a threat to anyone.
Glenn McConnell is a South Carolina state senator. When the Citadel, another famous military college, stopped playing Dixie at sporting events in the 1990s, McConnell was critical.
If we become intolerant and we start excluding things, we're on a slippery slope. And it eventually erodes that part of history, that part of the culture. Racism has occurred north and south and everywhere. And you can't change what occurred, but you can grow from it. And I don't think growing from it is excluding it. Because what happens is when you deny somebody that which they cherish, then that builds up resentment. And that's just not a good way to go. I just think the cement of a free society is toleration and incorporation.
I'm Carol Mosley Braun. In 1993, I was the United States Senator from Illinois.
In 1993, Carol Mosley Braun was the only African American in the United States Senate. She was locked in a power struggle with Jesse Helms over the Confederate flag. It was a technicality having to do with the patent on the flag, but symbolically, it was big. And Mosley Braun was winning the fight against the legendary Jesse Helms.
The next day, I was on the Senate elevator with Senator Hatch and Senator Dodd, and the door opened and Senator Helms started to come onto the elevator, and he said to Orrin Hatch, he said, "I'm going to make her cry. I'm going to sing Dixie until she cries." And I responded, "Senator, you could sing Rock of Ages and I would cry." Did I take it as a jocular kind of, you know, let's be friends? No, it was not. It was intended to be hostile, and it was intended to be aggressive. You know, and I don't mean to speak ill of the dead, because, as you know, he's dead now. But the fact of the matter is that he was part of a cadre of senators who had made a career out of fanning the flames of racial antipathy and antagonism and using that as a way of building their own constituency by exploiting racism.
Can Dixie ever shed that Jesse Helms fanning the flames baggage? The controversy isn't fading. In 2009, the University of Mississippi banned the song, but Coleman Hutchison, the University of Texas historian, thinks that we should be careful about dropping Dixie, even if we find it offensive.
By listening to, by studying Dixie, I think we get an extraordinary opportunity to see the history of the last 150 years, from blackface minstrelsy to the inauguration of Barack Obama. Dixie has been a major cultural thread that can connect those disparate historical moments.
Hutchison thinks that Elvis had the right idea. Yes, Elvis Presley. Elvis began performing a version of Dixie in the early 1970s. But the arrangement, by songwriter Mickey Newberry, gave Dixie a chaser, the battle hymn of the Republic.
Glory, glory, hallelujah.
Beautiful performances like Elvis's help us to continue to have an ongoing relationship with the song, help us to continue to find a place for it in our lives, our ways of thinking about the U.S. South, about the nation, about slavery, about racism. You know, I wish I could quit you, Dixie. Seems like something that American culture would want to say to this song, but it's not going anywhere.
For Studio 360, I'm Trey Kidd.
Elvis is hard to beat, but you can listen to different versions of Dixie at studio360.org. While you're there, check out the other American icons in our series, The Great Gatsby, Superman, I Love Lucy, and many more. That's studio360.org.